Thank you, Stu. And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Rob from San Diego.
Thank you, Gary. And welcome to all the new people. Larry, thank you for inviting me. This is a privilege. Congratulations to the birthday people. I noticed Vic rather humbly didn't mention he's also wearing his hat from Guadalcanal. He's one of our veterans. Thank you for your service, sir. I don't like to spend a lot of time on what I call a drunkalogue. If you're sitting here, you probably know how to get drunk, you probably know how to get sober, and you've probably done it a hell of a lot of times. But I think it's only fair to qualify myself so you don't think I'm telling you what I read in a textbook or what I heard at some treatment program. I am what you would call a fortunate wino. I'm not here because of my own brilliance. I'm here because of people like you. It's your fault. You caused it. Take responsibility for your actions. But I'm sober because I hung around with a bunch of other guys who were trying to get sober, too. And it works. But it works one day at a time. And as I go through this, I try to point out that in my recovery, there were a lot of what I call coincidences, these little happenings where I was in the right place at the right time or I talked to the right guy at the right time. And as you can see, the pattern of recovery for me, as I look back at it, they weren't all coincidences. I got a lot of real good breaks, but I just didn't recognize it at the time. The other thing that happened in my recovery, many times when I thought I ran into what was a disaster, I didn't get the job I wanted or I didn't pass that test or the girlfriend told me to get lost, I looked back at it a few years later, and what I thought was initially a very bad happening in my drinking or my recovering was really a blessing. I just couldn't recognize it at the time. But anyway, to go into my drunkalogue, we'll go back to the once upon a time part. I was born on the southwest side of Chicago in a little hospital called Little Company of Mary on 95th Street. I say that because that's where I ended up 34 years later, except in a different condition. One thing about AA, I got a free ride there. A lot of you guys didn't, and it wasn't in a police car, but it was an ambulance. Anyway, they had the normal house, the normal growing up, two really good parents, a nice sister, a nice dog, middle-class neighborhood on the south side, all the right things. And as any neighborhood, as much as us, I think we're all probably the same in this respect, the other guys in the neighborhood are going to go out drinking. We're going to get some beer. We're going to do that. That was fine. And when I was a junior in high school, I wasn't drinking. I was still trying to be involved in sports. And you didn't drink. You didn't smoke. And being small and skinny and being on the football team, you didn't do anything that would hurt you because you got hurt enough out there. The job I had that summer, I wanted to get on the lifeguard service on the beach at Lake Michigan, and I couldn't get it. I was 16. I had to work in a pool. That was a disaster, I thought. I couldn't go to the beach. Well, the pool job ended in time so I could get on the football team, which really is what I wanted to do in August. If I had gotten the job I wanted, I couldn't have played football. Just one of those things. Springtime came around. It's cold in Chicago in April. It's cold there all the time. And ran and run around that track, freezing in those little shorts and the singlet. The shot putters had a bottle of vodka in the back seat of that car over there. Well, you know where I ended up. The vodka in the car was a lot warmer than running around on that track. And then it started. I got to be a senior in high school. I started the lifeguarding at the beach with the guys who were all older than me. They had the beer. We could drink beer with them. It was okay. It was fun. Got away with a lot of the stuff. And I went to college at a very fine university. I started there. Couldn't play football. I did want to do that. I could get in trouble drinking. I had my first blackout on a ski trip. I got back and I didn't have my ID card, but the dean of students had it for some reason. And how he got it, I don't know, but I had broken some things and found out. And even that year, one of the coaches told my parents when they were visiting that I had came in drunk. I might have a drinking problem. That was a freshman in college, and he didn't know anything. But also that year, I flunked a physics course. I was in an engineering program, and I thought engineers were the guys that drove the Rock Island train. I didn't know engineers actually had to study math and physics and all these other things. That was beyond me. So I was a disaster. I flunked the course, and I had to go to summer school. And I had to go to summer school at a place that was just a rinky-dink City School, Navy Pier, University of Illinois. Yeah, who wants to go there? And I met a guy there who liked to drink, and he gave me a ride home all the time. We went drinking all the time. But he also had his football letter jacket and his gray T-shirt and played handball at the beach. And he said, well, if you ever get in trouble, come here and you can play football. I said, nah, that never happened. Well, obviously, the next year I flunked out of school. And I ended up going to this small university, and I got to play football, which I wanted to do. And it was fun, and it was okay, until I went downstate and got another person that ratted on me to my parents. The landlady where I was staying told my parents were down there, your son has a drinking problem. She didn't know anything. Everybody else is drinking, so what? You know, come on, give me a slide. And so what do you do if you're living on the south side of Chicago and you've graduated from college and now you're supposed to go to work or do something? You join the Marine Corps. Isn't that what everybody does? Well, they raise hell and do all these good things. And I joined the Marine Corps and went to Quantico and did okay in Quantico. And they gave your orders and your assignments one Friday afternoon. And I got all of the deals I wanted. I got infantry officer, 1st Marine Division. And that was Friday afternoon. Well, Saturday morning, I went to the little cafeteria and the headlines on the Washington Post were, 1st Mar Div to Vietnam. I never heard of Vietnam. I didn't know what it was. And I got out to California where the 1st Mar Div was up Camp Pendleton. And I thought, well, I'm going to be a surfer and hang out on the beach and all this stuff. And this older warrant officer was sitting there. He didn't even look up at me. He asked me if I was married. I thought it was a dumb question. I wasn't. And no. You got a car? No. You have dress uniforms? Yeah, they're being shipped off. You have them shipped to your home of record. I got the idea I wasn't going to be in California too long. I lasted 1 month in California, and I was on a ship going to out of Long Beach, going across the ocean. And being a good drinker, I had snuck a couple of bottles of scotch in with me and sort of the other guys, and we all got drunk one Saturday night in the wardroom, and I got in a fight, got beat up. And the next day, the ship hits the typhoon. I was seasick, big time. That drinking wasn't working too good for me. But I continued to drink, drank through the stuff over in Okinawa, was in Guam, not Guam, I was in Vietnam, and I got shot. And I thought that was terrible. That was the worst thing that could happen to me. And I thought, well, I'll go back to Great Lakes. I didn't go to Great Lakes. I went to Guam. Well, by being shot, I was out of country for 3 months, and a lot of my buddies that were still there got killed. So even though it's not fun to get shot, it's better than getting killed. It was a real break. Although Guam was funny, I had never heard of it before. It was an island in the Marianas. And it was a hospital, naval hospital. And one of my buddies was asking the corpsman, where's the action around here? Was it like Okinawa or the Philippines or something? He says, no, there's more churches here than there are bars. What? And I remember in third grade at St. Margaret's, I helped contribute to the missionaries in Guam so they converted the pagans. All the pagans were converted. There was not one house of ill repute on the whole island. It wasn't at all like the Okinawa or anything. And my buddies found out they were going to kill me. So anyway, we went back in country, spent some time there, got back to Camp Pendleton, and lived in a house in Del Mar on the beach. There was a 5-bedroom house with 7 of us. We had money, and we had cars and all the good stuff, and did the things you do out here and partied. And it was all fun. It was okay. Didn't get in too much trouble yet. But then I finally got out of the service and went back to Chicago. And I had a PE degree, so I'll teach. I'll be a phys ed teacher. Or I was teaching science, and I figured you got to get a master's degree or a doctorate degree or something like that, but you have to write a thesis, and that's too hard. So I don't go to that law school thing. I got the GI Bill, and we'll go to law school. I'm not going to be miserable in Chicago. It's colder. I'll go to California because I know where the Beachcomber Bar is and these things. I don't want to go to UCLA. I want to go to that Cal Western. It's closer to the Beachcomber. That's how I picked a law school. But the problem was, I went to law school. The textbooks didn't have pictures in them. No, there were no diagrams. I used to have some with football diagrams or basketball. They just had words. You had to read all that stuff. So that was miserable. But to keep my sanity, I thought I'd go back to Chicago and lifeguard in the summer with the beach with all the guys and this stuff. And I got a letter by saying, no, we already filled your position. Well, I worked there for 10 years. It was great. I had all the stuff, the lifeguard captain, the beaches. I was devastated. I couldn't go back to Chicago and work. So I was walking down the boardwalk one day in that Mission Beach station, And there was one of those lifeguards sitting on the bench, and I started talking to the guy, telling him all my problems. I used to work on Lake Michigan. I don't have a job. How am I going to do this? He said, oh, that's funny. I'm from Lake Michigan, too. I work here now. That was a coincidence. There's maybe 30 lifeguards for the city at the time, and only one other guy worked at Lake Michigan. He's the guy I talked to. That was one of those strange happenings. You know, it's a lucky break. So he told me what I was supposed to do, and I got the manual and did that stuff, and so instead of working in Lake Michigan in Chicago, I started working at right out of Mission Beach Station, having the own Jeep and doing all those good things on the beach, and did it year-round here. It was really rewarding. And that's, on a more serious note, it's one of the most rewarding things you can do is to save somebody's life. And you do it every day to people like me because you can help the newcomer. And that's really important. But I kept there and I kept working. And finally, I got out of law school. And in the course of that time, my drinking was getting bad. There were some bad things happening. Something bad happened to a nice lady I was going with. Somebody drowned on my beach. It was terrible. I was sober, but it still hurts, so I can't make amends on it. Then things kept getting worse and worse and worse. And so finally, I had to take that bar exam at the end of thinking, well, you're drinking all the time on your own, and this interferes with your drinking time. And I got a bottle of wine at halftime one day, and I didn't pass. That was devastating, but I knew I shouldn't have passed. And my father thought, well, maybe, you know, he's not too smart. Why don't you take the Illinois bar, too, and the California bar? And the next time I studied, I passed both of them, never thinking at all I'd ever go back to Chicago or ever need any license to practice law in Illinois. But I took it, and fortunately I passed it. And I was doing okay, and that was summer of 73. I had it all together, and now I knew all the answers because, see, I was a lawyer. And this cop that had the nerve to stop me because I wasn't driving the way he thought, I told him all my rights. I told him what he could do and what he couldn't do. And then I had these cuffs on behind my back. And since this is my second DUI, I missed the first one I had in 1970. And that one I knew I was sober, so I demanded a blood test. And it came out 0.20, which was twice the legal limit. Well, I wasn't as drunk as I was the night before. Yeah, so I figured, hey, I'm cool, and that didn't go too well. But the laws weren't quite as strict then. The second DUI, they suspended my license, which I thought was a disaster. But I had to give up my lifeguard job because I was driving Jeeps and all that stuff. And the other part of it was a blessing. What if I was drunk? And what if I was out there? That would really be a crush. What I thought was a disaster was a blessing. So I'm going to be a lawyer now in South Mission Beach, living on the boardwalk with the guys. And drinking wine. Didn't work. No money. Nothing. And I finally got to the point where there was one thing that happened to me. John told me how to tell this story. Before the summer of 73, one day I went down and opened the station at the foot of Grand Avenue, put the flag up, opened everything, and went home and went to sleep. And they kept calling the radio. They couldn't find me. Finally, somebody went to my house because they always find, you're passed out. And so I was getting to be dangerous. And fortunately, I got out of there before any major problems. But I was living on Oceanfront Walk. If you know the boardwalk in South Mission where the seawall stops, there's a big house. It was a three-bedroom house. A bunch of us used to live there. And we had a few parties, more than a few. But I had everything. I had the lifeguard sergeant. The rugby team was on back on the seconds. The nice ladies to hang around with, the buddies, the drinking. And it all went downhill. It just started getting worse and worse and worse. And when I tried to stop drinking is when the problems occurred for me. If you've ever seen anybody have a convulsion or a seizure, it's pretty ugly. Many times it's for epilepsy, but for me it was for alcoholism. When I tried to stop drinking, my nervous system would react in such a fashion that I'd black out, pass out, and start shaking. And it can be pretty horrible to look at. And it was scary. The first one happened at Rob Field in the January rugby tournament. People just thought I got kicked in the head, or I passed the ball off, I was laying on the ground, started shaking, and they took me to Mission Bay Hospital and let me out. And nobody really said you're an alcoholic because most of the other guys drank the way I did. And we were just having fun. But the seizures kept repeating. I was on my own living in this house. My roommates couldn't put up with me. They left me. And it turned out that I was by myself. I was getting evicted. And finally, a friend of mine from Chicago sent me an airline ticket and some money to come back. Another guy came me out and helped me out with the eviction. They put me on a plane, shipped me back to Chicago, and that was supposed to cure it, the geographic. It didn't. That was 74. So 74, I stayed there, and I was drinking, and I got one law job, and I got fired. I got another law job, and I got fired. And finally, I landed my big employment. I was a day-to-day laborer at the Ready Man. And there's nothing wrong with being a day-to-day laborer, but if you have a teaching credential and two bar exam licenses, a physical instructor's license, and you're working as a day-to-day laborer, you're not really working up to your capacity. And they wouldn't trust you any money. They'd give you a bus pass to go to the job site, and when you came back, they'd give you a small voucher to cash in across the street near the liquor store. And the people that get hired out, if you ever work this job, I feel sorry for you because I did it. An employer only brings these guys in for the dirtiest, foulest jobs that they don't want their own guys working on. I know I had one of my last seizures on the roof of a grocery store in August in Chicago, putting tar on the roof or spreading it out, and ended up in the hospital. So I wasn't doing too good with these seizures, and I wasn't working. My parents put up with me, and finally, towards the end, I thought maybe I'd go to AA, but I didn't really want to because, see, my case was different. I wasn't like you guys. And my dad had a heart attack in December, and he went to the hospital, and he said, okay, why don't you stop drinking because it's bothering your mom? I said, okay, fine. So we're doing okay. Then my dad died in January of 76. I had to go out for one or two more drinks, and I was downtown January 27th helping a guy on a collection case. And I went over to some Marine volunteer function, and I don't remember anything after that until I got home. How I got home, I don't know. How I ended up in that condo, I don't know. But I know the next day when I woke up, I had this feeling, like they call it an aura, I've been told, where you feel weird and you know there's something wrong, but you don't know what it is. So I walked out of the back, and I was going to smoke a cigarette or something, and I had another seizure, got a free ride to the hospital with the fire ambulance, the same hospital I was born in, 95th in California. And I thought I woke up the next day. I didn't. It was 2 days later, I woke up with my arms and legs strapped into this bed, tubes in certain orifices. I don't know how they got there, but I wasn't going to ask. And when I finally woke up, there was a Catholic nun. If you remember the sisters when you were little, you used to wear those black and white habits. She was standing there with my mother, and two of the rugby players were there. And did I die and go to heaven? Or what? I didn't know why a nun was there. But I woke up, and I didn't feel too good. And fortunately, they sent a guy in to see me that knew a lot about alcoholism. And he said, well, we'll let you out if you'll come back for AA meetings. They had to let me out. I was judgment-proof. I didn't have any insurance. I didn't have any money. They couldn't keep me there. They said, okay, I'll come back to these AA meetings. And I went to AA meetings because it was close enough to my parents' house I could walk down there to four blocks. And I always sat in the back row because I didn't want to be like those people in the front. They're those alcoholics. I wanted to sit back there. I don't want to. You know, they might think I want to know. And I found out the other guys in the back row were just like me. They didn't want to identify with the alcoholics because we were all there either on court orders or just got out of hospitals and stuff of this nature. And I finally figured out these guys in the back row, hey, we're all the same. Yeah, that's okay. So being good new alcoholics at 9:30 at night, we'd go out for coffee. I couldn't go out for coffee at 9:30 at night. I wouldn't be up that late now. But we'd sit around and we'd talk, and we had friends. They were buddies, and they were good guys and good people. And we made a lot of friends, and other people in the meeting were friends. And this guy leading the meeting kept saying, keep coming back, it gets better. And I kept sitting in the back row saying, when? I'm sitting here freezing my tail off in Chicago, and I'd rather be in South Mission Beach with the buddies. But one of the four of us couldn't come because she was doing a divorce or something and didn't see her for a while. Next time we saw her, and this was in a hospital annex building that was attached to the hospital, she came to the meeting. But she was in a wheelchair with one of those gowns where your tail sticks out and the IV bottle hanging down. I said, hey, Ruth, what happened? You're sober with us. Well, I didn't need the meetings anymore. Oh. And then Big Larry, who was coming with us all the time, he couldn't go to meetings because he was doing something with the gas and electric company. He was real busy, and he couldn't make the meetings. And I didn't see him for a long time. About a month later, I saw Larry. But he came to the meeting, too, in a wheelchair. With one of those gowns on, with your tail sticks out and the IV bottle hanging on. Hey, Larry, what happened? Well, I got well. I didn't need to go to those meetings anymore. I said, wait a second. I think I'm getting the picture here. If you don't go to meetings, you don't hear about what happens to people that don't go to meetings. So maybe I'll stay around because I'm a slow learner and I want to find out what's going on. So I kept going to those meetings and I was able to get sober and I finally picked up a job. I guess they felt sorry for me. A second cousin hired me in this law office downtown, and it was a pretty big office, and you know how some lawyers are real pushy and real complain a lot, and you don't want to be around them? Well, there were a lot of them. But my office was at the end. I had a great view of the alley. If you looked out the window, you could see the garbage dump. But the guy in the office next to me, he was an older guy, and everybody respected him, but he didn't yell at anybody. He was real polite. He was nice to the secretary. He never yelled at the secretaries. He never swore at anybody when the coffee machine broke. He didn't bitch about the coffee. He was a real nice guy. He was real nice to me. And he was nice. So I'd walk in, talk to him. I'd sit in his office, and he looked like a good guy. On his desk, he had one of these little plaques that says, God grant me the serenity to accept. I knew what that was. That's one of those AA plaques. And I didn't want to tell this guy that, hey, get that off your desk. They're going to think you're one of them alcoholics. You know, really, it looks like an AA plaque. And he was a real nice guy. But I was playing new in the program. I was only a month sober. I wasn't going to tell this distinguished attorney that he's an alcoholic. And so I was just nice to him. And finally, after a couple of months, I ventured out of my home group in the hospital. And I went to the meeting that was in the basement of St. Peter's on Madison Avenue in Chicago. It's the West downtown. I call it the intellectual giants of the West Side because that was a Skid Row, Madison Avenue, a little further. And I go into this meeting. I'd never been there before. Guy leading the meeting, he was the attorney in the office next to mine. He was in the program. I would have never known that if I didn't go to that meeting. It was one of those coincidences. He became my first sponsor. First job I got, the guy in the office next to me is a recovering alcoholic. It was my sponsor. Just a coincidence. You know, a break. So anyway, after I was in Chicago for a while, I had a chance in the summer of 76 to come back out here, and I did. I'm losing my place. I'm trying to stay on track. But anyway, I got out here the summer of 77. I hung around the club. I wanted to get the old girlfriend back, which I didn't. The old girlfriend's a very wonderful lady. My wife knows her, but she's in the program herself with her husband. Great lady. I didn't get my old lifeguard job back. I didn't pass the swim test. That was a disaster. I didn't get a job in the legal field. That was a disaster. So I had to go back to Chicago, and I went back there. Live with my mother, which was a blessing because she was a widow. It's not a lot of fun living with your older mother, but for 5 years I did stay with her, and God bless her. She's in heaven now. But I was there to help out my mom, even though I would have rather been here. And when I was back there, I met that doctor from the hospital where I first got sober. And he came to our A meetings. And the doctor said something. Well, first of all, he's a famous physician. He was a surgeon. He was doing kidney transplants in the 40s. He was a psychologist. He was also an alcoholic. He described alcoholism as the only illness he's ever treated where the recovery is better than never having had the illness. I had to say, what did you say, doctor? What was... Alcoholism is the only illness he's ever treated where the recovery is better than never having had the illness. The light went on. The other light went on, and I have to jump back, is I've been using the term coincidence a lot. I was out here at a meeting at the club, and the fellow was speaking. He was from Holy Cross University. He said, hey, you guys ever hear of coincidence? Oh, yeah, we all know what that is. Did you ever think of it? Coincidence is merely a minor miracle performed by God when he wishes to remain anonymous. Think of your own life and all those times or happenings you're in the right place at the right time. Or you just picked to go over there rather than over there and all of a sudden it fit together. I had a hell of a lot of coincidences in my life. And it wasn't because I was smarter than anybody else or luckier than anybody else. But somebody up there is taking care of me. Taking care of me real well. And I started going to these meetings in Chicago that ended up in my home group there became the basement of the elementary school I went to. I went to St. Margaret's on 99th Street, down the rectory in the basement. It was like a speakeasy. You had to go underneath the pipes and tubes and all that stuff. And you got into this room. And these characters are in there. I would have been scared to sit with them when I was in high school. The head football coach from my high school, the head football coach at one state over here, the basketball coach from that university, a bunch of priests, a couple judges, two doctors, and then guys from the neighborhood. Some of the guys from the neighborhood couldn't even read, and they said the most brilliant things of anybody. The guys were illiterate, but they kept telling you stuff that was just brilliant. And then I mentioned some of these people were clergymen or priests. go to church on Sunday, you hear them talking, they're telling the same stuff you heard Saturday morning. You know where they got their material. They got it from those guys at the AA meeting. They did. In fact, one of them became my sponsor. He's a hell of a good guy, Father Dan. But they were telling the stuff they heard at the AA meeting. I knew it, and they were plagiarizing the meeting. But these guys were good. They were firefighters and cops. And one of the firefighters, actually, he was a guard on our football team in high school. He made a statement that I try to apply to myself. And these fires and the ice and the snow and the high rise, and that's some hairy stuff. He said the only fear he had was that he might lose the fear of drinking. And he does some stuff that's really horrific, you know, where you're talking serious life or death. The only fear he has, he might lose the fear of drinking. I try and remember that because I can get carried away on other things. So stayed in Chicago for 5 years, and I finally got back to San Diego and started hanging around here and met guys in the program, ladies in the program. And I had been running because I left out part of my story. There's a gal that used to run, and she did the 10Ks and stuff. And being skinny and small and not a football player at heart, not to make it, I got into the running game. And then these guys were riding their bicycles from the club in PB up to the coast to halfway houses or something like that. And we were doing that on Saturdays, and we were doing the triathlons. Then I ran into this beautiful lady that's got a bigger triathlon trophy than I ever got, and she's mean as can be, and I ended up marrying her. She's tough, hard lady, but her triathlon trophy is bigger than anything I ever saw, and she doesn't let me know that. And anyway, started meeting buddies out here, doing good stuff. I have made a lot of friends. Charlie and John teach me how to surf. Patrick and I go down to the H&I meetings. There's people all over the place that just really fit together. But I stayed here and did all the stuff that you want to do and finally got it to going. But I took with me when I came here some of the things I learned in Chicago. At that time when I was getting sober, they showed a lot of the Father Martin films. I don't know if you have them out here or you get them that often, but he had Chalk Talk, he had AA in the Family, he had AA in Feelings, and they're real popular. And I'd show them at a couple of places where they needed somebody to show movies. And the things that he said that I thought were real good were, that which causes a problem is a problem. That which causes a problem is... Well, that doesn't apply to me. See, I only drink a little bit. It's like she's only a little bit pregnant. It doesn't count yet. I'm trying to cop a deal, and it didn't work. And my friend John Riley told me the same thing. He says, every time he drank, he didn't get in trouble, but every time he was in trouble, he had been drinking. I didn't like to hear that. That was too accurate. And then still back, I went to one of those banquets back there. We had to pay money to go to it because it was a restaurant. And it was a lot of money, $15 or $20 or something. And they had a speaker from California, a guy, Clancy, you probably heard of him. And Clancy gets up there and he tells us, okay, how many people here learn how to stop drinking? We all put our hand. Okay, you guys are all in the wrong place. Well, I spent $15 to come here to learn how to stop drinking, and you're telling me, what the hell is this? He says, you already know how to stop drinking. How do you stay stopped? That turned a light on for me. I know how to stop drinking, and probably everybody here does. You stop for your husband, you stop for your kids, you stop for the coach, you stop for the drill instructor, you stop because you're in school. We all stopped. But I always went back because, see, next time it'd be different. Next time I wouldn't mix the marijuana with the vodka or the wine with the thing. Next time was a disaster. But I didn't understand that. I couldn't understand it. I thought, I was still in the concept that my problem was drinking. It was explained to me that the drinking was but a symptom of my illness. It's like the ship that runs into the iceberg. It doesn't run into the tip of the iceberg. It's getting hit by the freight train. You don't get killed by the caboose. It's the starting. It's that which's below the surface that kills you. It's the thinking. I had no idea of that. I thought, hey, we got this AA stuff. They're going to teach us how to stop drinking. We're cool. Let's just get on with life now. I'll be done in 2 weeks. Fortunately, that was more than 2 weeks ago. So I got out here, and I had these ideas that, okay, we can do it now if we just keep working at it. And I was going to get a job, and another major disappointment. I applied with the... See, I've got 2 DUIs of my own already now. I applied with the DA's office, and I was... first on the civil service list in 82, didn't get hired. Disappointment. First on the civil service list in 83, didn't get hired. Really disappointed. So I was doing the public defender work, defending DUIs. And I was right at home with that, because I knew these guys' stories. And they had, if you got a .20, maybe you consider pleading guilty. But I did okay. I did fairly okay. And one day I was sitting up there in the presiding department, a fellow sitting next to me says, "Hey, why don't you apply with the city?" City, they just do misdemeanors. I went, okay, I'll do that. So I didn't even have a coat and tie or that stuff. And I went, all of a sudden I got a job with the city. And that was okay. And so I ended up prosecuting DUIs for 5 years after having two of my own. And I heard all those defenses. But it was fun. We did that. And I kept wanting to get transferred from the criminal division to the civil division because we got more money, more prestige and all that stuff. And I kept never getting transferred. And finally, they transferred me over there and gave me two mentors, one for workers' comp, who had about 2 weeks in the program of recovery in AA, one for property, who had about 3 months in the property. And these were my mentors to teach me law. And I had 15 years of sobriety, so I could sort of help share recovery with them. It was a perfect match. That was not on my time frame, but it was on my higher powers time frame. It was just another one of those coincidences that sort of happened. So anyway, I kept that job. And even though that's not the job I wanted, after a while, it came up to time to retire. Well, not only did I have my time working for the city attorney's office, they gave me my lifeguard time, the civil safety service, and the time in between. So my benefits were probably a third more than they would have been if I got a job with the county. Merely because I didn't get the job I wanted, I got the job God gave me with two pensions rather than one. So now I'm retired and I can do volunteer work down St. Vincent's in the legal clinic and hang around the house. And I'm the groundskeeper now at the house where I live. Most people retire and they get, a Hawaiian shirt or something. I retired, I got a rake. And I used to wear a coat and tie and look real official. I go, now I get out in the yard, they're still dirty. So we're making it. And the problem with my fooling around is I forget to tell you how grateful I am just from working the steps and meeting the people. We were talking to me last night about meeting a fellowship, and there's guys here I surf with. There's guys here guys taught me how to run marathons. Guys taught me how to live. I have a wonderful wife that takes care of me. Her son is here. Theoretically, we're related. We're, I guess you could say, stepson. That ain't the case. He's one of my very good friends. He's a gentleman I respect. Get his advice from him and a man I look up to. Her daughter's here. Also one of us. She's doing great. And once you get in the program, you get to communicate with people a hell of a lot better than when we're in that superficial friendship. But the thing that I like to point out, though, is I didn't get here just by coming to meetings. I came to the meetings and I did the steps. The steps are important. I did them many times. The first step was sort of easy for me because if you're strapped in a hospital bed and your arms and legs are strapped to the side of it, you're sort of powerless. You're not going too far. The second step about sanity, well, hey, I got letters after my name, BS, everybody knows what that is. And some people have MS, I didn't have that. I had JD for my friend telling me just dumb. I can't be insane. And then I started doing these court-appointed conservatorships, and the people that were really, really way out of it, messed up, they wanted everything. They wanted a jury trial, they wanted all this, and they were crazy. The ones that were pretty good, they were almost recovering, they wanted to stay in their conservatorship. They recognized they had a problem. The ones that have the major problem can't recognize it. I couldn't see my problem. I thought everybody blacked out. I thought everybody was a wino. That's not the case. But what happened is I kept coming back, and I was at one retreat on the third step, and I thought everybody knew the third step. Well, we all know that, yeah. And I didn't. I missed part of it. There was one part of the third step that I sort of overlooked. You're not turning anything over to God. You're turning it over to the care of God. And I said, what do you mean, care? What's this? Well, you're a lawyer. You've seen banks. Haven't you ever seen the trust department? San Diego Trust and Savings? Banks? Trust? What do you mean? I think I had that course. I don't know if I can remember that. Well, we're not giving anything up. We're giving it up to the care of God, to the trust of God. He's going to take care of it for you. Can God manage your life better than you can? Well, I didn't do a good job. I was down at the bottom. He's taking care of me better than ever. I had a fourth step I worked on. I got the Hazelden guys and all that stuff, and I put it together and outlined for him. And, of course, I told you my first sponsor was this older distinguished lawyer. I had it. I was outlined and I gave him. Hey, Mac, this ain't going to get published in the Library of Congress. Why don't you just tell me what happened? He wasn't impressed. I had it outlined. Well, I did. And there's just working with somebody as a real person. He showed me these things. The sixth and seventh step help us get better. The eighth step, I did all the amends. I told you there's some people I can't make amends to. There's some guy hit in the face when we had something, or somebody else, we threw beer bottles on their house. I can't make amends to the girlfriend of the guy that died. The lieutenant wrote that letter. There's nothing I can do. Some things you have to give up. The tenth step is wonderful. If I mess up, I can tell somebody, hey, I'm sorry, I messed up. My buddy Frank here, where'd Frank go? He's telling us here. He's always telling me, hey, I messed up, because we tease each other. We fool around. He's Italian and I'm Irish and you know how those guys are. No, we surf together. But he's always telling me, hey, sorry, I'm fooling around. But that it keeps the street clean on both sides of the street. The 11th step, thoughts through prayer and meditation. I've always been going to one particular church. Not one church is better than another. It's like saying your Ford's better than your Chevy. That's not the case. Whatever suits you is fine. But I'm comfortable in my church. And through the program, I've been able to enhance that participation quite a bit, understand better, read better, and find out things and listen and hear, which I couldn't before. I heard one time, we have eyes we don't see, we have ears we don't hear. We overlook that. We're in that purple fog of, for me, wine. But we got a chance, and we're making it as long as we show up. The 12th step is sort of a strange thing for me. If you want to keep it, you got to give it away. That's why I think it's a privilege to be here. And my friend Patrick and I, we used to go down to detox on the fourth Tuesday of the month. I don't know if anybody got sober there, but we sure stayed sober. We laughed and we had a good time. And those people helped us probably more than we ever helped them. Yeah, their sponsorship, that's important. I think it's a two-way street, though. There's some guys that claim I'm their sponsor, but they sponsor me more than I sponsor them. I do have a sponsor, a good guy, a real good guy. He's not here tonight. But I also have a hell of a lot of friends, guys that are not officially sponsor or sponsees. If I talk to them, we meet together, we goof around and do things that are wonderful. The program is not just all work. It's a lot of fellowship. It's a lot of fun. And what happens is you can do things, or I can do things in sobriety that I could never do in my drinking days. I sat in a bar stool. I was going to do all kinds of stuff until I fell off and passed out. And I could tell you all kinds of great stories where I surfed. I didn't do any of that stuff. But we got sober and we have a chance to live. And I feel awkward up here telling you some of the things that happened to me since I'm being sober, because I don't take it as bragging. It's what you people caused. I've been surfing with Charlie in Hawaii and Costa Rica. I've been running marathons. John ran me run the Boston Marathon with him. We did a bunch of triathlons. We go camping. This year we were in the Big Island, Hawaii. Then we were in Yosemite to go cross country skiing. My way. These are things that just happen if you take away the booze. All the money I wasted on booze, all the loss of self-esteem. But that's not what's really important. What's really important is where we are today. And I didn't get to stand up here because I read the book better than you did, or I'm smarter than you are, or I did more 12-step cut. That's bullshit. I'm here because you people kept me here. And a higher power does not have a red phone in the back room of my house and call me up and tell me, hey, Mac, we're going to do this today. My higher power talks to me through guys like you and ladies like you in the various rooms. And I don't always listen to what I hear, but I certainly observe. And if I see what you're doing and it's working for you, I'm going to make it. Because I know when I was new, I sat back there just like you guys. And I used to say, hey, if that klutz up there can do it, why can't I do it? He ain't smarter than me. And he's not. I just got a break. I got a break because I kept coming back here. And I read in the book, and I believe it's very true, that we start with gratitude because we're not in the same trouble we're in. And that gratitude leads to humility. Not less than, not a groveling type of humility, but the humility I've learned through people in the program is the ability to perceive oneself in terms of reality, being willing to cover, to achieve whatever we're supposed to be. I'm not the worst person around. I'm not the best person around. I'm someplace in there. That's okay. And I'm going to try and do better. And that's all it's about. The gratitude to the humility to the spirituality. we understand there's a higher power that helps us in whatever way we want. And he's there. And if you look in the book, I think it's on page 52 or 54, the main purpose of this book is enabled us to establish that contact with the higher power. And we can, just by coming and hanging around. The other thing I'd like to point out for the guys that are somewhat new, or maybe a little bit new, it says, hey, those guys got it all together up there. He's got a sweater on, he's got a beautiful wife. He didn't hitchhike in here, because I got here without a driver's license, all that stuff. The late Bill O.C., as a judge in Chicago, used to tell us, he says, don't look at where you're at, but why don't you look at where you came from? And I know where I came from. My drink of choice was wine in a bottle for a pint. You could get a pint for 80 cents. It was 20% alcohol. It didn't taste too good. You wouldn't want to put this out in social circles, but you could get that bottle of wine at the liquor store at 95th and Kedzie, walk down the alley with your bottle of wine, and you were cool. Now, you don't have a hell of a lot of friends doing that, and it's sort of miserable, but that's all you can afford. 80 cents for a bottle of wine. This isn't the South Side of Chicago. I'm not having an 80-cent bottle of wine tonight. We've got everything here. It's all right here. We've been given gifts. It's the type of thing that we've gotten so much, we just look around. If we can share, we're going to make it. And I want to thank you for letting me share my sobriety, and it's your fault that I'm sober tonight. Thank you.